It's Wednesday, time for our weekly discussion with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us this week is Roger Whittle, Managing Editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. And Roger, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here, Carl.
Also with us on the line is Jonathan Ellis, reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And Jonathan, thanks for joining us as well.
Hey, thanks for having me, Carl.
Well, Roger and Jonathan, the last time you were both on the show, we were discussing South Dakota being the only state President Obama had not visited while in office. And then several days later, it was announced that he's coming to Watertown to deliver the commencement address at Lake Area Technical Institute. That's on May 8th. Roger, do you think that's because he was listening to the show or because he read the Watertown Public Opinion's editorial inviting him?
Well, it was probably both. as I said on April 1st on this show, that day we had written an editorial. He had just announced he was going to Utah, leaving South Dakota as the only state unvisited, and we wrote an editorial inviting the president to come to Watertown. And oddly enough, one of the things we mentioned in the editorial was the success of Lake Area Technical Institute, and it was, I think, about 12 days later, we got the word that he was actually coming to give the commencement address there. So everybody around here is pretty excited about that.
And how do you think, Roger, that all came together, that he chose Lake Area Technical Institute?
Well, nobody really knows that for sure, unless maybe we'll ask him when he gets here. But he is on a big push for community college education, two-year college. He has put forth a plan to offer free tuition to these schools because the workforce needs of areas would be greatly enhanced if we get more students through technical and two-year colleges. And LATI has also been in the news a lot the last several years. The Aspen Institute awards Community College Excellence Awards, and Lake Area was in the top three in the nation for 3 years in a row, which is really unprecedented for any school to have that kind of a run in their awards program. So Lake Area has been in the news lately, and I'm sure he was looking for some place to go in South Dakota, and everything just came together.
Well, this brings up another question. I'm sure that another speaker had been scheduled for the commencement. Was somebody bumped?
Yes, indeed, somebody was bumped. In fact, when I heard that he was coming to give the speech, my first question was, wow, I wonder who got bumped by President Obama and how do they feel about it? So I found out, called her, and did a story on her last week. It was the scheduled speaker was a Dolores Stemwittle, who had been a teacher at the school since 1966, so she's been there 50 years. And I sat down and spoke with her, and just a wonderful woman who said she had found out in March that she was going to give the commencement speech, and she's been practicing it every day since then because she's such a perfectionist. She wants to get it right amount of time. And it was only 10 minutes before the LATI president, Mike Cartney, made the announcement that Obama was going to come. He called her into the office first to break the news to her. Mm. And her first response was, oh, great, I don't have to practice my speech anymore. But then she was told that, well, couple things. First of all, you will do it next year. So you have another year to practice speech, but she's also on standby in case of some national emergency. If the president can't make it, then she's going to be ready to step in. But I can tell you by talking to her that the president is going to have to go a long way to give a better speech than the one I'm sure she's going to give next year.
So what's happening in Watertown right now to prepare for the president's arrival?
There's a lot going on. There's a the city, the county, the school, law enforcement, everybody is coming together. The problem now is nobody in town really knows a whole lot because the White House doesn't give out information on these kind of things that freely. Really nothing is known yet. We don't know when he's coming to town, how long he's going to stay, how he's getting here. The Secret Service is telling our city hall and the school and police that we will learn all these things the week of the event. So right now, it's just kind of basic planning going on. I know the mayor has street sweepers running double shifts every day to get and we're going to restripe all the streets in town and get everything looking as good as possible for the visit. But as far as hard facts, there really aren't any. We do know that for the first time ever, you will need a ticket to get into the Lake Area graduation. They will be free. They're not charging for them, but they're expecting such a rush of people that the Civic Arena holds about 5,000 people, and they usually fill that building up on a normal graduation. But now they're thinking with the president here that the demand would be way over the capacity. So there will be a ticketed system. They're trying to keep the focus on the students and only giving out tickets to the students and family and, of course, the staff at LOTA. They don't think there's going to be any tickets left over for the general population. And I think everybody is fine with that. We, you know, as big an event as this is, it's also a commencement ceremony for these students, and they're trying to keep the focus on that. They are talking about having the event I know South Dakota Public Broadcasting is planning on live streaming the speech. They're talking about opening up other venues in town with theaters to broadcast the speech there so people can gather and watch it. But all those plans are still kind of fluid right now, and we'll know more probably in a week or so.
Well, Jonathan Ellis, looking beyond just Watertown, how important is the president's trip to South Dakota as a whole?
Oh, I don't know. I don't. I mean, I don't know that it's important at all. I think we like it when those leaders pay attention to us. I mean, we've liked it in the past when we've had primary dates in which politicians actually, you know, running for president actually fought for our votes, and actually, you know, certainly President Obama did that in 2008. So, I mean, we like that. I guess it makes us feel better. I don't know at the end of the day how, quote, important it is, though.
Well, moving on beyond the president's visit, which we will continue to talk about until he comes, the state has launched a new ad campaign. The theme is Why Die on Mars When You Can Live in South Dakota. And Jonathan, looking at that campaign, does this seem like an effective way to market the state as more than just a tourist destination?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sort of on the outer edge of who they're trying to market that to. I think they're looking at like from 25 to 44 year olds, I think, is, and so I'm sort of on the older edge of who they're trying to market that to. And it seems to me, I mean, it's interesting. We heard Pat Costello talking about this earlier in your run up to the show about how it's gotten people talking. I mean, that's step one, I guess. But it is interesting, and you know, a lot of people, again, aimed at a younger audience. You know, a lot of people that age have kept up with the fact that there have been some private entities and looking at perhaps colonizing Mars and one-way visitors to Mars. And so I think people that age are aware of that. And then for South Dakota to sort of insert itself into that. It's fairly clever. I don't know. You know, I think the jury's out on whether or not it works, though.
And Roger, what are your thoughts on that campaign?
Well, he's right. We won't know if the campaign works until after it's been going on for a while. But I thought it was interesting. In the run up to this campaign, they did some research and found out, you know, what people's impressions of South Dakota are. And everybody was really well tuned into our tourist attractions. Like, everybody knew about the Black Hills, and everybody knew about Mount Rushmore, and everybody knew about Sturgis, but they were woefully uninformed on anything else that we have to offer. And I think that is important to get that other information out there, our good schools, our low crime, our clean air. I think it could help.
The ad says South Dakota is progressive, productive, and abundant in oxygen. Looking at that, Jonathan, all three accurate?
I will give us two of the three for sure. We're productive, certainly productive, and we have clean air, which I'll give us that too. The progressive one is something more interesting, and I guess since this is a political show, Carl, I mean, if you were to think of progressive in the terms of purely political, then I would say no. I mean, if it's progressive in the sense of, you know, as Roger says, we have good schools and we have low crime. I mean, I guess it's all on how you view that word. I think a lot of people, again, in the political world, view it as, you know, progressive liberals, and they would not associate that at all with South Dakota.
So, Roger, you agree that the definition of progressive, it could mean a number of different things, and not necessarily we're talking about politically being progressive.
Right. I think that's obvious. When I first saw that progressive, productive, abundant oxygen, that was the one word that made me pause for a while. But Yes, it's all in how you define it. We are definitely productive, and I just went out and did some oxygen tests today, and we do have abundant oxygen. So, again, 2 out of 3, maybe 3 out of 3.
Well, the question that I think comes up frequently in you know, sort of what's behind this campaign and other similar campaigns is how difficult is it to attract people to South Dakota who really have no connection here? Roger, your thoughts?
I would think it would be difficult. Just from what I was reading about from the survey results, the opinions people have of South Dakota who don't live here, they don't really know much about it. And it's kind of hard to attract somebody to a place, to an unknown. That's probably, I think, a big reason of why they're doing this campaign, to educate people about what South Dakota does have to offer. And I think a lot of people may change their minds if they actually take a closer look at the state. You know, we're not a barren wasteland out here. There are things to do. There's friendly people. It's a good place to live. I've lived in a lot of cities and a lot of states over my career, and I found South Dakota. I'll put South Dakota up against any of them.
Jonathan, your thoughts on the difficulty of attracting people to South Dakota who have no connection here, no family, no history?
Yeah, well, and Roger nails that. I mean, in the sense that if you look at the survey results, there a lot of the responses were people just don't have a clue about what's in South Dakota other than sort of the tourist stuff. And so, you know, Roger's right. So you have this advertising campaign that sort of highlights the different things you have, and then hopefully they pull that off correctly. I mean, you know, show recreational activities in the Black Hills. Recreational, I mean, here we've got a great park system in Sioux Falls. There are all kinds of different things that would appeal to young families in communities across the state. I mean, you know, so hopefully if they pull off that advertising campaign correctly, I mean, that will help. I agree that, you know, and I think that in the past, even the Rounds administration, in the past, they've often focused recruitment efforts in terms of luring people, potential business people and you know, jobs of the state, by they focused on people who actually are from South Dakota and who maybe moved out of state. So I think, you know, past economic development activities have recognized that connectivity issue, and they've actually focused on trying to, you know, find those people who have ties to the state.
Moving on beyond the ad campaign, Republican Senator John Thune has raised nearly $800,000 in the first quarter of the year, giving him more than $10 million for an expected run for a third term in 2016. That brings up a question, Roger. How much money does he need to run a reelection campaign, which we should mention he hasn't officially announced yet?
Yeah, I would think he has probably about $10 million more than he needs right now. He doesn't, like I say, he doesn't even have an opponent now. So, and he is just so popular in this state. I can't see him requiring that big of a campaign chest to take on whoever will run against him.
You mentioned whoever will run against him. Roger, do you expect any Democratic candidate to be announced anytime soon?
Well, I would hope there would be some for the sake of the Democratic Party. I mean, he ran unopposed last time. They really, really need to come up with somebody to run against him. Who that would be, I don't know. Maybe Jonathan would have a better idea of that.
Jonathan, any thoughts of anyone announcing anytime soon?
Well, it's still pretty early. I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know that anybody really needs to be announcing anything until late, you know, at the end of the year, early next year. I mean, if you put it in historical perspective, you know, I, with regard to the $10.4 million that John Thune has, I mean, that's third most. My understanding is that third most campaign chest out of anybody in the Senate. And let's explain why that money exists. That money exists, A, because Thune's a pretty good fundraiser, but B, because he ran unopposed last time. So he's had basically two election cycles to save up all this money. And that's a danger that's one of the, you know, this is one of the mistakes that the Democrats made back in 2010, not running anybody against him. Well, now it's coming back to bite them again in this cycle. I mean, you know, so that was a huge mistake. He has all this money because he ran unopposed, and if he'll have even more money next time if they don't have somebody to challenge him this time.
Now, there had been rumors that the Democrats would announce a candidate for Congress at this past weekend's McGovern Day dinner. That didn't happen. Roger Whittle, do you expect any Democrat there in that campaign to be announced?
Again, I would hope so for the sake of the Democrats. Like Jonathan said, if you don't run anyone against her this time, she doesn't have to spend any of her campaign money this cycle. And she will have it'll be even more difficult to run anyone against her next time. So I would hope they learned their lesson and they will get somebody to run against her.
Jonathan Ellis, any thoughts on who a possible congressional candidate could be?
I left that person a message and that person didn't call me back. So there's a state lawmaker that has been rumored to be looking at that race. I haven't talked to that person specifically, so I don't want to throw out names, but that would be beneficial, I think, to have somebody who's got some elective experience, and at least some name ID, if it's a lawmaker, some name ID, in their area. And I mean, that always helps. It's all, you're getting off to a good start that way. So, it is early. I mean, if you look at, perspective, I mean, Kristi Noem didn't even announce in 2010 when she was running that year until like about February, I believe, of that year. And two other Republican opponents in 2010 had announced in the fall. So we're still really 6 to 9 months before. I mean, and if you're one of these, if you're somebody who's going to be a potential candidate, I mean, certainly behind the scenes you're trying to build that support now. But in terms of official announcements, it's a little premature probably.
So there's no hurry?
I don't think there is. I mean, if you're doing the things that you should be behind the scenes, and that is, again, talking to other leaders within the party, trying to build some support that way behind the scenes, probably making a trip or two to Washington, D.C. to gauge what support there would be from the national party interests, in the case of Congress, the DCCC, if they're, meeting with them. If you're doing those things, I mean, you're you don't need to be making official announcements. Right now is the time to just be kind of getting ready to build that campaign.
Roger Whittle, do you agree that still no big hurry yet?
I would agree with that. I think campaigns are in general getting longer and longer, and I think people are getting tired of that, and I think everybody would appreciate a shorter campaign season, so somebody's doing us all a favor.
Well, finally, an important figure in South Dakota politics died over the weekend, Walt Conahan. And Jonathan Ellis, you wrote a little bit about him in your blog. Maybe you can share who he was and what his accomplishments were in South Dakota.
He was really a respected gentleman here in this state, especially in the Sioux Falls area. But he's an SDSU graduate, was very prominent student at SDSU. In the 1950s, and later he goes after graduating. He is in Washington, where he was a longtime staffer for Senator Carl Mundt. He served as Jim Abner's chief of staff. So he was there for quite a while, and he came back here. I think my understanding is he was the first director at the South Dakota State University Foundation. He ended up serving in the state Senate 3 terms. And just a gentleman, just a nice guy. I met with him last summer, and he'd suffered from cancer for quite a while, and I'd met with him last summer, and he really thought it was time, or thought it would be a good idea to really talk about what happened with Carl Mundt after the stroke, and make sure that, what he knew about that, and what some others who, guys who are getting older, what they knew about it. So historically, we were correct in what was actually going on behind the scenes. So Walt was very helpful for me, writing a story on kind of what was actually going on with the Carl Mundt saga and how that still affected politics today. So he was just a great gentlemanly guy.
Well, thanks for that, Jonathan. And that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Jonathan, thanks for joining the program.
Hey, thank you, Carl.
And Roger, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.